self-driving cars are mostly fake news.
Fake news for a long time.
But the real parts are big news. Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to this episode of Tech, Cars, Machines, where we make you smarter about how technology advances. Everything from sensors to wireless connectivity to artificial intelligence is changing industry and transportation. Since cars are especially fun and accessible to everyone, we're going to start with a few episodes on the influence of advanced technologies in transportation. My name is Ali Tibibian. I'm your host, moderator, and occasional monologuist. I'm a co-founder of GTK Partners. I'm based in San Francisco. I have partners around the globe. And at GTK, we focus on advising companies on mergers and acquisitions, helping them raise capital, mainly from strategic investors, and we also sometimes invest our firm's capital in growth companies. The hook in the episode title, the part about fake news, is obviously a provocative encapsulation of our view that the rumors of the death of the steering wheel, as Mark Twain would say, are greatly exaggerated. We've had this view for about 2 years, sometimes to amusing effect. About a year ago, I was called dystopian when presenting to a large audience at a technology incubator. Somebody clearly didn't know what the word dystopian meant. But the point of this episode isn't the fake news part of it, really. It's the big news part of it. In other words, when you appreciate the size of the transportation industry in detail, you'll see there's no need whatsoever to exaggerate about robot car fleets and whatnot. This industry is so big and so much is happening that it's easy to accomplish some big, amazing things even when you're working incrementally. And a lot of people are. You can also achieve big things with big breakthroughs that are niche in application. And a lot of people are. So here's the organization of this episode.
In part one,
we're going to focus on the big news. We'll be talking about the size of the industry along a variety of metrics and how that's made for new and exciting companies and developments.
In part two,
we'll give some history and insights on general autonomy and the fake news part.
In part three,
we'll talk about the real news, where technology is making big differences in kind of the spacecrafty, robot-y way that's really kind of fun to talk about, experience, finance, and do work in. We've tried to record this in a way where they're generally independent, but I guarantee you it's worth listening through in the serial way that we've organized it. So,
part one.
Let's talk about the big news. The revenues of the transportation industry are huge. $2 trillion a year globally. $2 trillion. Apple, Dell, Facebook, HP, Google, Microsoft, Samsung. Total revenues, a bit north of $700 billion. So most of the names that define the global consumer technology experience added up are barely a third of the size of the auto industry, the vast majority of which, by the way, is passenger vehicles. Let's take a look at those unit volumes. 100 million units, huge. 100 million units a year, about 75 million of it passenger vehicles and about 25 million of it commercial vehicles. We've kind of rounded off a bit there, obviously. That's 3 vehicles manufactured every second. Tech Cars Machines, fun fact, the largest parking lot in the world is at the West Edmonton Mall in Alberta, Canada. 20,000 parking spaces. And with the unit production of the auto industry, that means the world's largest parking lot is 24/7, 365 days a year, is being filled by the transportation industry production every 2 hours. What's weird about this example is that Alberta's, February average temperature is 20 degrees Fahrenheit. So what I don't understand is, and this is a flat white parking lot, how do people run across this thing in February? So imagine with this kind of scale, how much you can do when some new features become reasonably prevalent in vehicles. Remember when having a screen in your car was big news, you know, playing CDs, MP3s, seeing the cover art, blah, blah, blah. That's called infotainment. And just one of the participants is a company called Harman. Remember Harman Kardon and JBL speakers? Some of you probably do. That's the company. And Samsung bought them for $8 billion about a year ago. And that's because Harman has a very strong position in providing both the stereo systems as well as the infotainment systems in a lot of vehicles. Behind the scenes, these cars these days are now all calling to headquarters. So a new generation of companies is now being spawned in that direction. For example, Cloud Car raised $15 million from Jaguar, I believe. Smart Car, which is providing what's called the orchestration layer of software, connecting, sort of being a glue layer between the car's operations and whoever externally wants to talk to those operations, and another company called Aeris, which helps the car get registered on a network once someone takes possession of it. That's actually kind of a complicated event because manufacturers want to make the same car over and over again and be able to send them all over the world and have the car kind of discover the local network itself and register itself and start receiving information. None of this stuff sounds like science fiction, but the impact is big, and you can build some big companies enabling incremental updates to vehicles. Here's something odd about car ownership. A car purchase is a really big deal for most people. And what's interesting is, after people sort of financially bet the farm to buy a car, what's crazy is that they don't actually use it that much. Here's some stats from AAA Insurance for the United States. And remember, we're tagged around the world as being car crazy. So here's the car crazy statistics here. The average American drives about 10,000 miles a year, or about 48 minutes a day. If you're of working age, you're driving probably around 13,000 miles a day, a little over an hour. And of course, if you're not, you're driving less than that. So in the United States, you purchase a vehicle for about $35,000. That's the rough average for the United States. It costs $1,500 to $2,000 a year to fuel, and it's a pain in the neck. You've got to repair it, maintain it. It gets broken into, gets a flat. You can hit something. Somebody can hit you. You can hit somebody. And basically, people are just parking it. And this is why you can see companies like Uber and Lyft being so successful. Although to some extent, we should add successful in a quote because they still lose money on every ride. In any case, though, they're clearly providing a convenience for the rider, but just as important, they're making the car ownership more sensible for the driver. They're increasing the utilization. And we're not done with these ride-sharing concepts by any means. Take a look at a company called Kango, K-A-N as in Nancy, G-O. They're basically trying to introduce similar concepts in a manner where people would be comfortable putting their kids in the car. And look at a company called Axle, which recently just got a little round of financing. They're trying to kind of do the same thing for intercity busing. Now, you wouldn't have thought about that, but it's a pretty legitimate market. Not everybody's going to be an Uber and a Lyft, but there's plenty of big things to get done just revolving around the underutilization of this enormous asset base that this enormous industry has deployed around the world. Now, if you own your car and want to monetize it, kind of like the example we just gave you, but you don't want to be a driver, there's some really interesting concepts emerging. Two examples are Turo.com, T-U-R-O, no relation to our own GTK partner, Mr. James S. Turo, and GetAround.com. These are basically Airbnbs of vehicles. And what they're looking to do is to raise the utilization of the vehicle by not employing the owner as a driver, but simply having the owner rent out the car on a short-term basis. Some really interesting twists are being introduced to this market by that connectivity that's coming into vehicles that we talked about just a few minutes ago. One example is Care by Volvo, and the other one is a company called Tesloop. In both cases, these companies are ultimately looking to provide you management of your vehicle. So although you own it, it's Volvo or Tesloop that guarantees a certain maintenance level of the vehicle and make sure the tires are maintained, make sure it's been oiled and lubed and all this good stuff. And in the case of an electric vehicle, presumably that it has a certain level of charge in it. So notice how incremental improvements in the vehicle capability, just having a few sensors on the tires and on the fuel gauge, et cetera, and then connecting them to a wireless network, how much it enables to happen and how much change it enables in this industry without needing to have the car fly around like George Jetson's did. Here's another one of our contrarian side notes, and we'll be quick about this. Car ownership is an expensive hassle, but that tells you that people love getting where they want when they want. In the absence of excellent public or semi-private transportation, which is really an urban thing, and sometimes even if you have those, people worldwide buy a car as soon as they can possibly afford one. In other words, private car ownership isn't going away very easily when you think about it globally. That's important to keep in mind as you try to predict where all these technologies are going to take private car ownership. Here's an example. In the 1920s and 30s, my hometown of San Francisco used to have a bunch of daily trains to Sacramento. For our international listeners, that's the state capital about 100 miles away. And it had about 40 rail cars running inside the city. By the 1960s, we were down to 4 rail cars. They'd all been ripped out in favor of private four-wheel vehicle transportation. Getting back to the main argument, if you're an environmentalist, you're probably thanking heavens that car utilization is so low. And you're probably mad at us for exposing ideas on how to raise that utilization. And that's because another dimension of the transportation industry is really staggering. Because the fuel consumed by these vehicles really is staggering. Basically, 1 billion gallons of fuel worldwide every day. I tried to put an image to this, and here's what I thought of. The Transamerica Tower, which is a few blocks away from us, from our offices here, it's that triangular building that's, you know, always present in the panoramas of San Francisco. Now, I'm quite a ways away from my engineering graduate work. Somebody check my math here. But by my calculations, that Transamerica pyramid with its 48 floors can hold about 500,000 gallons of fuel. So folks, we're setting a match to a Transamerica pyramid-sized vat of fuel in the morning to represent the Western Hemisphere consumption. We're doing it again at night to represent the Eastern Hemisphere consumption every day. Clear by now that technologies that make only a little bit of difference in fuel efficiency can have an enormous impact. Here are some examples. Rearview mirrors that can be replaced with cameras to reduce air friction. Recapture of energy during braking. The very complicated software that runs the start-stop function of engines. Each of these only contribute about 1/3 of a mile to gallon to maybe close to 1 mile per gallon in terms of additional fuel economy. But because of the scale of the global consumption, it's like each of these is saving 1 floor of that Transamerica pyramid worth of fuel. Here's a scream-worthy side note. Transportation consumes only about 1/4 of the world's oil. So humanity ignites 4 billion gallons, or 8 Transamerica pyramid towers, of oil every day. Now, in addition to the environmental impact, this fuel is actually quite expensive these days compared to the cost of electricity, which may be a surprise to a lot of people. In San Francisco, we not only bring you outrageously priced real estate, we're also the proud home of both the most expensive fuel and pretty much the most expensive electricity in the United States. In this town, if you drive about 10,000 miles, it would cost you $2,000 a year of gas, but only $500 of electricity. I'm comparing here a Model 3 Tesla to a 5 Series BMW or an E-Class Mercedes. This is really big news. When you talk about all this fancy technology, there's a tendency to forget that the average consumer is really quite cost sensitive, and very much so when it comes to car operating costs. In this country, when the price of fuel changes, presidents give speeches on the subject. So the question is, can we get consumers to focus on this big difference in operating costs between electric and gasoline vehicles? Can we get them to focus on this rather than, say, the driving range of an electric vehicle, the limitations of which have been a showstopper for many consumers? I'm wondering, can we?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Electric vehicle or EV sales used to be a trifle for 20 years. Then Tesla introduced the Model S with greater than 200 miles of range, and GM in late 2016 did the same with the Chevy Bolt. Here are the stats. Tesla sells 100,000 fully electric sedans and SUVs a year. This is despite the almost $100,000 average selling price, delivery delays, below average reliability, and zero advertising. And the Bolt, which is still kind of an expensive vehicle by average standards, you know, over $40,000 with a few options, looks a little odd and only seats 4, but the volumes are running around 30,000 units a year. My own experience in a Tesla Model 3, that because of the benefits of it being an electric vehicle, amongst other things, it's just as likely to hurt mid-sized luxury competitors as the Model S did to the same competitors' top-of-the-line vehicles. And electrification means a lot of battery chemistry, very sophisticated software to manage battery utilization uniformly through the many cells in a battery pack, charging stations, and a lot of suppliers of engines and transmissions and fuel and repair stations with a lot less to do. So maybe we should start worrying less about autonomous vehicles rendering drivers unemployed and more about electric vehicles putting internal combustion engineers and mechanics out of work. In our view, one of the greatest missed inflection points in the last couple of years is this ability of electric vehicles to compete with internal combustion engines on range. Special episode soon on electric vehicles and Tesla.
Doesn't it feel great to know what's fake news and what's big news? Keep at it. Click subscribe. Subscribe with the little button in your podcast app or click the three dots in the little circle. Or visit us at techcarsmachines.com and gtkpartners.com, where our subscribe buttons are much bigger.